Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Today, we're looking at another aspect of electric vehicles. Now, as electric vehicles gather pace, more and more come to the market, we see more electricity demand, and as the saying goes, a rising tide floats all boats. From a utility perspective, there are lots of different ways that a utility could play in the e-mobility space. And today, I'm delighted to be talking with one of the major German utilities about how they see the opportunities in e-mobility, what they've been doing over the last years, what they're learning, and where they're going. And I'll be joined, as always, by our resident expert on the topic here at Delta EE. So let me introduce my guests. First up, Amadeus Regabis, who's head of charging infrastructure at German utility EnBW. Hello, Amadeus.
Hello, John. Nice to be talking to you today.
And thanks for joining us. And my second guest, Alexander Lewis-Jones. Hello, Alex.
Hi, John. Likewise, thanks for having me.
So I'm looking forward to a really interesting discussion because there are so many different ways that utilities, in their broadest sense of the word, can play in the e-mobility space. They're starting to do so. Some are being quick, some are being a bit slower. Alex, you look across Europe at a whole variety of utility activities, and Amadeus, really interested to hear more about EnBW. Amadeus, can we start with you? And for listeners that don't know EnBW, can you give us a few facts and figures about EnBW?
Yeah, happy to do so. EnBW is, with over 21,000 employees, one of the largest energy companies in Germany and in Europe. We supply around 5.5 million customers with electricity, gas and water, as well as energy solutions and energy-related services. And we've been quite active in the field of charging infrastructure in the last couple of years.
Okay. So I'd like to delve into the charging infrastructure topic. But before we do that, charging infrastructure could be at home, it could be public, you could have e-mobility tariffs, you could be looking at vehicle-to-grid and smart charging. So can you give our listeners a feel for the journey EnBW's been on, I guess, in the last few years when electric vehicles have come more to prominence? So where did you start, and tell us a bit about the journey that you're on?
Yeah, we actually started in the year 2011 with a public funded project in the area of Stuttgart and Karlsruhe in southern Germany with public AC charging. And since then, we have developed our strategy into the public charging at first, which is actually shifted from AC standard charging to DC fast charging. Mm-hmm. But since our approach is the always charged approach, where we want to offer our customers charging solutions at home, at the workplace, or en route, like you said, we actually target all these areas mentioned by you.
And that fits with the overall strategy of EnBW, which is to move more and more to the services and solutions business. How long has EnBW, do you feel, made this shift from a old traditional utility to one that, well, still has traditional activities but has a really strong focus on services and solutions?
Well, since a couple of years ago, I believe the term Energiewende made it quite throughout Europe, which is the transformation of the energy sector. And in Germany, we had a a real hard cut into that direction to transform utilities. So our transformation of the company into a way more renewable energy company with intelligent infrastructure solutions has been a central element of our strategy for quite some years now. And we're still pushing that forward. And our activities in the charging infrastructure business just underlines that individual transportation is just a part of the energy transition in general for us.
Okay, thanks, Amadeus. Alex, can you help us and help our listeners just break down the public or the charging space? So there are lots of different ways we can charge our electric vehicle, lots of different types and speeds of charging. We talked about this in one of the previous podcasts with GridServe and Triodos Bank, but to refresh our listeners' memory, how would we break down electric vehicle charging?
Certainly, yeah. So with charging, I think an important way to look at it is EV charging is as diverse as places that you can park your car. It is a new form of parking. So if we take that lens of we were in the car parking industry, we might see there's opportunities for parking on the street or indeed in people's homes. You might drive to work and then you have spaces to park your car there and a range of other opportunities in various different destinations. So flipping that back into the energy world, we can see some clear segments appearing. So home charging is certainly its own very popular segment today. Workplaces will serve their business fleets as well as their employees who are bringing their company cars to work and to charge during the day. And in the public space, there are a number of ways that we can cut that up depending on the business model behind it. So we look at destinations, places where you would want to visit anyway. You might be going to the supermarket or the cinema and you can actually do some charging whilst you're there. Compare that to transit or en route charging, as Amadeus has mentioned, that is where we can charge when we need to. We're on the go to a destination much further away, so we have to fill up there. And a final category that we have done a bit of analysis here at Delta EE recently is on the on-street market, which kind of blurs the boundary a bit because it can be in residential areas where people don't have driveways or garages to park at, or it might be in more urban areas too.
Okay, so summarizing that, Alex, in home, workplace, public, and that public could be destination, it could be transit, or it could be this sort of slightly blurry on the street segment.
Yes, and then from that point we could then look at the different speeds that you would expect, whether it's the slow or standard charging, through to faster charging options such as rapid or the emerging kind of ultra fast or high powered charging that we've heard about in previous podcasts.
And slow, rapid, ultra fast, maybe one person's faster than another person's slow. So how would you characterize that either in terms of, I guess, the time to fill up your tank, or so to speak, or charge your battery, or the kilowatts of power drawn for each one?
Yeah, so for us, we look at, you know, anything with a specification of about 22 kilowatts or below now, we can consider that standard or slow. Mm-hmm. So if it's, say, a typical 7 or 11 kilowatt charger, you could be looking at between 5 and 8 hours to fully recharge your vehicle.
Yeah,
for most standard models out there. Then when we look at the rapid charging or other fast charging speeds, this is when more of the DC solutions come in. So we go beyond the AC capacities, which are the lower numbers, through mm-hmm. to 50 kilowatts, perhaps 60 kilowatts, and then certainly the Tesla supercharger network at 120 and beyond up to 350 that we're talking about currently. So for a 50 kilowatt DC rapid charger, you might be looking for a 45 minute session to top up your vehicle.
Yep.
Through to the very fast, the ultra fast, where we're targeting more the 5 to 15 minute top up experience, more similar to the four quart refueling experience today.
Yeah. Okay. So on public, I guess we're seeing all of those speeds at the moment, and at homes we'll see the slow charging and this emergence of ultra fast or high powered charging starting to be rolled out.
Indeed, and I think you, on that basis, you've got to really think about how long am I going to be sat in this particular car parking space. That will determine what solution you go for. Mm. It can be very tempting to think that the AC market is very much focused at homes or workplaces, but it does have a big space in public too, because a lot of public locations and destinations, people will stay parked for 8-10 hours or more, so it gives you that window for the slower charge.
Yeah. Okay. Amadeus, coming back to you now, how, relating this to what Alex described, how has EnBW's charging infrastructure activities developed across that, anything from the home, workplace, public spectrum, or the slow, rapid, ultra-fast spectrum?
Well, since we're not able to address each charging situation at the same time, we started with the public DC charging. Like Alex said, you don't want to spend too much time, for example, on a resting area on the German Autobahn. Mm-hmm. You want to recharge your car very fast. So we actually started with our use case that we call use case traveling, resting areas, locations at highways or on highways, like these resting areas, and we moved to locations that are very useful for people that commute to work, like gas stations. So mm-hmm. we partnered up with different gas companies where we use their locations to provide DC chargers as well. Mm-hmm. But we have that very big target group that is like Alex mentioned, when you go shopping at the supermarket or the even bigger shopping center, or you go to eat something fast food or mm-hmm. to the drugstore, there are several companies that we're working together with, and we're equipping their parking lots with a charging solutions that really fits their needs. Like I mentioned, the shopping centers, they just need both. They need a standard charger for people that really enjoy shopping and spending lots of time at these locations.
Yeah.
It's very helpful for EV drivers if they can find a DC fast charging or even an ultra fast charging spot at these locations as well.
And how many charging charge points have you rolled out so far? And can you give us a feel of your level of ambition?
Yeah, we have. We started. This is one thing I have to mention at first. We started 3.5 years ago with our activities in the DC fast charging business, and we have as of today around 250 fast charging locations all over Germany. Mm-hmm. And so we've been growing at a very ambitious speed there.
Yeah.
And our ambition is to have around 1,000 fast charging locations by the end of next week.
Wow.
Don't worry. If my colleagues from the fulfillment department would see that, hear that, they would probably be very angry at me. No, next year.
Yeah, I think you might have just given us some.
But it's still an ambitious. Sorry about that.
In reaching these sort of numbers, If you had to step back and think about the biggest challenge here, and this is where your fulfillment people might have something to say, I'm sure, but is it around location and property? Is it around the partnerships? Is it around the capital? Is it around the physical people power to install this and roll it out? What's the hardest thing to achieve this sort of rate, do you think?
Unfortunately, it's a combination of different aspects that you mentioned. One thing is actually to have the suitable grid connection at these locations.
But
you mentioned the partnering. That is actually something that really takes a lot of time, because the investment in fast charging infrastructure is quite high. So when we go into partnerships, there are very long-term contracts, and as everybody of us understands, if you sign a real long-term contract, and I'm not talking about 2-3 years now, I'm talking way higher, you have to be sure that the partner is the right one for you. And with all these information going through press and media, some potential partners tend to hesitate to go into a partnership, because they don't know how is the regulation going to develop, how is the market going to develop. So this is one part, but getting the grid connection, the DNO, the distribution network operator, to establish the grid connection, or even when it comes to public ground, to get all the required goes from the authorities, that is something that really is taking some time. And lots of people think, well, there is a electric power line beneath the ground. You just open up, put the charger there, and that should work. It's not the way it
works. No, if only it was that simple. With the partnerships, Amadeus, do you have is your pipeline of partners, have you got enough and more than enough partners in there? Is it a case, as you said, of the time to negotiate, get to agreement, and get the partnership deal over the line? Or is it a challenge to get enough potential partners into your pipeline?
Well, actually, we do. We are still looking for more partners. We are still looking for locations where we can build up these fast charging locations, and like I said before, shopping centers or supermarkets, this is something that we're really aiming for. It takes a lot of time to negotiate a contract and to get the framework for a partnership. Unfortunately, we are still short of partnerships in order to build up so many sites that our ambitious goals will be easily reached by the end of next year. Now I'm saying it correctly.
Yeah. And on the grid connection, I mean, it's a lot of power. You know, you line up a few 50 kilowatt chargers, that's a big connection. Can you just tell us a bit about when you start considering the grid connection, and of all the potential sites you look at, how many you have to strike off because there isn't a suitable grid connection? So is it one of the first things you look at, or does it come later in the process? And if it's later, what's the sort of dropout rate of sites?
Well, we do have around 20% of the locations that we're looking at that won't be able to be built to grid connection. There is a solution to nearly every situation when it comes to the grid, but it often takes time or a lot of grid empowering activities, which are often tied to a huge financial investment. So that makes some locations not
suitable.
Very likely to be built. Yeah.
Have you done anything yet with batteries or distributed generation rather than building a bigger connection when necessary? Or is that something you think you'll do more in the future?
Well, actually, we tried that already. We tried it at our office in Stuttgart with a big battery pack. But when it comes to public charging, it is actually our goal to have the strong grid connection,
mm-hmm.
because when you see number of cars rising and the EVs are just rising and more cars coming, this would be a bad customer experience if the battery would be discharged and because so many customers were at this location before that one guy that is coming and wants to charge his car and he only gets like a standard 11 kilowatt or 20 kilowatt charge. That would be disappointing. So
okay, so you try and focus on where the grid connection is strong enough for you to build what you want. Alex, I'm going to bring you back in now to explain a couple of acronyms, and our listeners will be pleased not to have heard too many acronyms so far. But can you explain two acronyms, and we'll try and not go beyond these two, of CPO and EMSP?
Certainly. So these are perhaps the two most important acronyms you need to know when we're talking about the public access charging. So whether that's the transit or on street or destination. So the CPO stands for charge point operator. And you could probably make a good comparison with any form of network provider. They are responsible for the charge points and making sure the electricity gets from the grid and into the car.
Okay.
The EMSP, that's the CPO. The EMSP is the electromobility service provider.
That's one of my favorite acronyms in the energy sector, I must say, Alex.
Fantastic. You see it in various different forms. It's less as ubiquitous as the CPO. You might, in Germany, for example, you might see EMP as more common, or EVSP. But broadly, it's all the same thing. It's about the service provider model. So the organization that has the customer relationship, providing the information about where to find your charge point, access to that charge point, the information whilst that charging session is happening, and then of course some form of payment at the end of that.
Okay.
And that might be through a card or through an app on your phone and linked to websites so you can find information on it.
And then some of that payment would then get passed over to the CPO in return for use of their infrastructure.
Indeed. So it's the CPO is really providing the electricity, and the EMSP is making sure that's a service delivered to the end customer.
Okay. Now, Amadeus, you know what's coming next. From EMBW, can you share a bit on your strategy and aspirations about the CPO role, which I guess you're definitely playing because you're building out this infrastructure, and the EMSP role? So what interests you most? Is it just the CPO role, or is it the combination of CPO and EMSP?
Well, we are active in both roles, and although I am you could say the CPO guy of EMBW, mm-hmm. My colleague who runs the EMSP service, he's very important, because when we sat down and took a look at charging infrastructure and what do we want to provide for our customers, we said, well, in our transformation as an energy company, going from an energy supplier to an energy management, we want to offer our customers the best experience. So that includes, from our point of view, to be the CPO, to build up a known network at locations where the customer really wants to charge, as well as providing the access and payment methods at these locations to just implement a high standard for our customers.
Yes. So the customer can get their whole experience from EMBW. You're providing that infrastructure,
yes.
And the interface with
yeah.
the charging. And presumably you allow others to, with your assets, you allow others to play that EMSP role, to play that service provider role as well? Or are you looking at more of an exclusive approach?
No, we're actually open because we believe that at this stage of the market development, the only thing that really helps the market to develop is when you're open and you're looking for solutions that really suit the customer's need. And I can give you an example. When you take a look at all different CPOs and their solutions of the EMSP world, you might get to the topic of roaming, that which means if you have a solution like the access card of a CPO and or EMSP, and you want to charge it a different network, there's always a different pricing and very tariffs that differ from the one that you're used to. So our EnBW Mobility Plus, which is our solution in the EMSP business, has that great opportunity or the great non our approach is that our customers always have the same pricing, no matter if they charge it our CPO network or if they charge it a CPO network where we have roaming agreements with.
Okay, so it doesn't matter whose infrastructure they're using. They have one experience, which is using EnBW, and that's simple and clear for them.
Yes.
The business model, Amadeus, of developing charging infrastructure, it's CapEx heavy, and the revenues will come with utilization, which will come with more rollout of electric vehicles. Can you tell us a bit about that challenge of a very high CapEx or CapEx intensive model? Are you doing all of this on your balance sheet or off the balance sheet? And how do you make assumptions about the utilization rates, or does that keep you awake at night in terms of what the utilization rate will be?
Well, luckily, the EnBW is a very experienced infrastructure company. So we as an energy company, we know how infrastructure works. We know it from electricity grids, from water grids, from gas grids. We know that you really have these huge investments, these very high CapEx based business cases, and we have the ability to do that, and the whole company knows this is not a short-term business where we will have the usage of the charging infrastructure within the next 2 or 3 years. You have to have a you have to be in a situation where you can really rely on that your own company knows how to do that and is okay in operating in that way to invest and have the earnings way later.
So it's just an extension of part of your core business of infrastructure.
It is one part, but we're really taking it serious, as you can see by this very, very ambitious goals to be one of the leading CPOs in Germany.
Alex, when you step back and look at utilities across Europe in all of their different forms, how do you see the sector in general engaging with a sort of CPO model? Do you see many others sharing EnBW's sort of infrastructure ambitions, or do you see some utilities definitely keeping away from that business?
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting the last 6 months or so. I've been going out across Europe and exploring who's doing what with this CPO model. And there's broadly two strategies for e-mobility for utilities. One has been focused on kind of doubling down on providing new services to existing customers. So that means actually they're straying away from doing kind of the more CPO side of things and doing more selling charge points and tariffs to commercial and residential customers. The second strategy for people who have been building their networks is there, but it's far fewer players than the more traditional services and products that a utility would offer. The second point I would make there is that yeah, it is very different in each market, and a lot of the multinational utilities are certainly exploring how they can capture more of the CPO market and what type of CPO they want to be. It's no longer possible to just say, okay, yeah, I'll do public charging. As the market matures, there are, you know, CPOs that focus on the AC networks and CPOs that focus on the DC and focusing on different types of destination as well. So finding which one of those is going to be the most valuable for them has been very much the focus point of the multinationals.
So characterizing that then, Alex, there's a whole spectrum and range of utility activities and strategies when it comes to public charging, from really no focus and focusing on their retail and home charging business and tariffs, through to probably EnBW at one end of the spectrum, which is building out a really strong CPO business.
Yes, and I think, yeah, I think everybody's exploring to see where those value streams are. What are the value streams? What are the secondary value streams we can get from different types of destination? And I've certainly had conversations across Europe with utilities who are looking at perhaps one segment, perhaps looking at fleets and how they can support their existing businesses, and realizing all the software solutions that a fleet would require for charging actually marries very well with a destination charging product as well. So they've actually, without choosing to go for it, have actually found that they can cross-sell their one product into more the public charging CPO model as well.
Well, maybe that's a topic to dig into on another podcast, Alex. We're coming to the end of this podcast now, so it's that time on the podcast to bring out the Talking New Energy crystal ball. And controversially, I'm going to ask each of you different questions, so two different crystal ball questions. First of all, Amadeus, I want to ask, I'll ask you about where you see EnBW and e-mobility in general in 2030. So looking 10 years into the future, can you give us a snapshot or a pen portrait of EnBW's e-mobility activities in 2030? And Alex, I want to ask you, for the CPO model in 2030, what do you think that will look like in terms of the mix of utilities, oil companies, others who will have built out the CPO infrastructure? So Amadeus, let's have that pen portrait or that vision of EnBW in 2030 with e-mobility first.
Yeah. Well, EnBW will have made this transformation into a company which is a real renewable energy company with intelligent infrastructure. And I'm pretty sure that EnBW will play a major role in the field of charging infrastructure. And when it comes to e-mobility in general, I believe in 2030, it will be just as normal as it is to drive an ICE car at this moment. And all these very, these talks at the moment from people that do not want to let go and people that are trying to convince ICE car drivers to already switch to e-mobility, they will be much less, much fewer of them. So it will be just a normal way for individual mobility.
And presumably, Amadeus, those people will be charging in different places and locations with a EnBW card or account, and they'll be using EnBW infrastructure at home, at shops, at motorway service stations, etc.
Yeah, of course. I do hope so, that they'll be using the EnBW Mobility Plus app in order to charge. Yeah.
Okay. Alex, your question about what will the charging infrastructure space in terms of the infrastructure, who will have built that out by 2030?
Yes, I think firstly, you've got to look at the public sector again to see where where the ambition is for funding and how much more funding will come from public sector in order for various ambitions for electric vehicle adoption to occur in local, regional, national, or pan-European levels. Once you've understood how much more money there is in the pot for those different funds, I would look at, you know, the variety of CPO players out there today, from traditional utilities, oil majors increasingly stepping up, as you mentioned, as well as a lot of the startup brands as well. We know we're seeing consolidation of these brands and of these companies today, and that's only going to continue. But I think we also expect that across different countries, different brands will remain popular, certainly over the next 5 years. When we get into the second 5 years of the 2020s up to 2030, then we need to start thinking about those other assumptions of how will technology develop? Will we have more simpler ways to, you know, plug in and just charge your car without having to use a card or an app? And all of a sudden, maybe the automotives will have more of the customer relationship. And we think that might be an interesting pulling point on who will really own the EV customer in 2030. Will it be the automotives, or will it be the infrastructure providers, the energy and oil majors that we know today?
Well, only time will tell. There's certainly, as you say, a wide variety of initiatives and activities developing that infrastructure. But it's absolutely fantastic, Amadeus, to see a company like EnBW, your level of ambition and aggression in terms of building this charging infrastructure out today, and wishing you all the success in meeting those targets for the next years.
Thank you very much.
That's the end of today's podcast. Thank you very much, Amadeus. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much. It was fun. Thank you.
Good. And Alex, thanks for your expert views, as always.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
And last but not least, thank you to everyone for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast and start thinking about where you're going to charge if you haven't yet bought an electric vehicle. And we look forward to welcoming you back next week. Thanks and goodbye.